Mets?
Well, hundreds of men walk into the wrestling training gyms every year. Only the bravest of those choose to enter the deathmatch rings. And of those, we have the original gladiators. On the line with us today is one of the originals, the OGs, from the land of Lincoln, but now proud, I'm proud to call him a fellow Hoosier. We have Madman Pondo on the line. Pondo, how are you, sir?
What's up, guys? Thanks for the time.
Oh, thank you. We really appreciate it. We know you're a busy man. You know, I was just at your show 2 weeks ago there in Summit. Watched you put it on those young guys, and it was a pleasure to get to see you work for the first time ever live. I've seen you on TV a million times, so it was a pleasure to get to see you live.
Well, that's too bad you couldn't have done it way before I got old as shit as I am now, you know?
Well, I've seen plenty of the stuff online. It's just...
I've had the pleasure of seeing you at CZW shows and some indie shows years ago. So, and you still, like I said, you still got it going on. That TOD match with Tremont from a couple years ago is still my favorite match of the tournament.
I do my best. I'm not gonna quit doing death matches till they quit doing me.
No, sir. You've got the psychology, and like I said, you and that bowling ball spot was one of the fucking craziest spots of that year. That was awesome.
Right. Before we get into the heart of the show, I do want to ask you, you have a way to draw that empathy, sympathy, or heat better than pretty much anyone in this space. Where do you go? You've got to go someplace in your brain. Where do you go to get to that focus and stuff?
I tell everybody that retardation hadn't helped anybody out in life more than it has me. So being a little silly, a little crazy, a little... whatever I am helps out a lot, and being full of shit and having the gift of gab helps out a lot. So I just put that all together, and it's just things that I've learned over the 29 years of how to make a crowd stand, how to make them sit down, and I think I do all right with it.
I would say so. Just even again, not to go back to a more recent show, but. You know, that show in Summit, you were obviously the most over act there. Knew Jack wishes he was as over as you were, but even in that show, when it was time for the rejects to get some heat on you, everybody was feeling for you, and it was awesome.
So, right.
But I don't want to waste any more of your time. I know it's late. You guys, everybody works in the morning, so let's get right into it. We're going to step back in time. We're going to go to October 21st, 1997. We're in New Albany, Indiana. What do you remember? Like, just kind of go put your brain back in that time and, you know, kind of walk us through, like, maybe I kind of want to know, like, how Ian got a hold of you, how it was booked, all that stuff, you know, as much as you can remember.
I got a hold of Ian. Death matches is what I wanted to do for sure. And I heard that Ian either got fired or quit. It depends on which one you talk to. But, as soon as I heard that he was no longer a part of ECW, I did my best to get a hold of the guy. And I probably searched for about 2 or 3 months. And finally, a buddy of mine, Kamala Jr., he called me and said, "Hey, I got a hold of Ian." And he gave me the number, and the rest is history. I traveled all over with him from... close to that day on.
Yeah, you two, like I said, too, as Max was talking, this is our journey into death, and we are talking about the first King of the Deathmatch tournament.
For Ida Bay. Oh, yeah, an intro would have been a good idea, huh?
And whatnot. No, it's okay. You had a good intro. I'm just throwing it in there. No, my question is, obviously, you and him had wrestled all over at that point. You've been in Detroit. You've been for the Clowns, you know, pre-JCW. You've been in Milwaukee. You deal with the infamous Four Corners pain at the Walt Whitman truck stop in NWA, New Jersey. When did Ian say, "Hey, you know, obviously, you guys are hanging out at this time, and you're close, I'm sure." When did he say, "Hey, I want to run a King of the Deathmatch tournament"?
He did not. I was running with another guy named Tim Jackson that was running the Evansville Coliseum. And it was my idea to do a King of the Death matches. And Ian was one of the guys that we had booked for it. But Tim Jackson dropped the ball and didn't have a King of the Death matches. So then Ian had a King of the Death matches. And that is when he asked me to be a part of it. And that is how he was the winner of the very first one, because he was the one who ran it. But, you know, there was a lot of good talent in that. There was Doug Gilbert, Tower of Doom, you know, a lot of good deathmatch guys in the first one.
Oh, yeah. Rolling Hard, you know, God bless him, Cash Flow, Bully Pain, Ox Harley, you know, Axel and Balls.
Yep.
And Axel and Balls were still both ECW guys at the time, right?
Yes, they sure were.
Yeah. So my next question for you was, you always knew you wanted to be a hardcore, a deathmatch guy, right?
I didn't always know it. There was a thing called tape trading back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I was a tape trader for a little while, but.
Right. Well, the tapes that would get me the going the most was the Puerto Rico and Japanese deathmatch tapes. And, you know, that's what I decided. That's what I wanted to do. Watching Masanaga and Mr. Pogo do their feud with barbed wire bats and you know, exploding barbed wire and catching Pogo spitting fire and catching Masanaga's head on fire. That's what got me going. So that's why I knew that's what I wanted to do, was the deathmatch style.
Absolutely. Now, I have a question. Is obviously, with the talent, you always hear, you know, Ian. Did Ian have anyone else he was trying to bring in for the show? Was there any, like, bigger talent he was trying, or anybody that might have backed out or just didn't pan out?
You know, I really can't remember. I don't even remember Axel and Balls being in the very first one. So that tells you how much I get hit in the head.
Right.
I don't.
Well, Balls did one match for about 4 minutes and then didn't do a second match. So.
Huh. Well. Yeah, see, I've got my brains beat out over the course of time that I don't even remember half the stuff that I should be.
Sure, sure. Now, your first match, you went in and you were against Tower Doom. Obviously, he's a guy who wrestled there, and, you know, he went on to a little bit in Big Japan and whatnot. I'm sure you probably wrestled him before in the territory there.
No, that was the first time.
Okay. You know, thoughts on going in there with this gigantic, huge guy?
You know, I was always, like I said, the stupid one. Like, I didn't really care. I would jump in there with Dirty White Boy Tom Burton, who was doing the half shoot stuff in Japan. It didn't matter to me. I just wanted to get in there and entertain and you know, show the people what I had. And so if it was a Tower of Doom, then I would get in there with a Tower of Doom. If it was a Balls Mahoney, I would get in there, you know, all types of stuff. It didn't matter to me who it was, just as long as I was in the ring.
Go ahead.
Well, because at this time, IWA Mid-South, I would still say, had a very USWA feel to it. I mean, you know, two cards before this, we had Flash Fanagan, Tracy Smothers, Billy Joe Travis, JC Ice, Doug Gilbert. So, you know, a lot of USWA talent. You yourself had done some enhancement work in USWA back in the day, and you wrestled for, you know, CWI in Indiana also.
Right.
So definitely this was a...
The Louisville Gardens had, I don't know, something happened with the USWA and the Louisville Gardens, so they all came over to Ian's, is how we all, you know, the USWA workers came to IWA Mid-South.
Hey, who paid worse, Ian or the Jarretts?
Definitely, you know, it was pretty close on both. But the Jarretts didn't care about anybody but the stars that they were trying to create. Ian at least cared about the stars that he had, you know, that he was creating in that Kmart building right there on Dixie Highway.
Right.
So no matter what, you know, like, only you guys and maybe a handful of people know that I was even doing any Jarrett stuff, which I opened my mouth when I shouldn't have, and that was short-lived. But I learned by the time that I got to Ian's to keep my mouth shut. And you know more about me at the Kmart building than you ever would at the USWA stuff.
Sure, that Kmart building was legendary.
One more question about the Tower of Doom match. Now, he's in the ring barking a lot. He's loud. And he's also calling spots pretty loud. Does that throw you off? I mean, if you're used to the USWA guys working a little snugger, but also used to working for a camera, maybe not as loud in the ring and maybe not being so boisterous with the spots being called, does that throw you off, or are you kind of able to roll with that?
I mean, if you could tell, I guess I was pretty comfortable with it. I mean, I was doing whatever I could, and I don't even remember the barking or the loud calling. But, you know, back then, people wasn't looking for it as much as they are now. So I guess being a little louder than what they was then, you know, there was no Botchamania back then. So, and yes, there was VCR video tapings, but not like YouTube every week tapings there are now. So, yeah, I don't think it threw me off at all.
And I guess listening to it with headphones in and going slow enough to write notes, I'm pausing the video every 10 seconds. So I'm hearing probably a little more. When you're sitting in the back, I mean, obviously this is going to be a big show. Ian's, you know, played it up pretty big. You're sitting in the back and you watch the first guys go out and kind of not really, I don't want to talk bad about anybody because I don't have the balls to do it. So I'll be the first thing. Anything I'm saying is just kind of compared to what everybody else did. You had five or six matches that were a little more, you guys were the sixth match, I think, that rolled off. You had four or five guys kind of go out there and hack and slash. Did you know that you were going to be able to go out there in that first match and really kind of do the first really good match?
I still to this day didn't know that I was the one that had the first good match. Are you talking about, did I know that I was going to do more deathmatch stuff than the other guys did?
Well, like, I mean, the first, especially the War Machines and those guys, they were just very punch-kicky. Hack slash kind of bounced each other off the walls. Didn't really do many spots. You know, the traditional more hybrid-style deathmatch stuff. Whereas with your stuff, I can already start to see some wrestling and some real, like, you can tell that you were actually trained and a good worker. Did you know watching that, you're like, oh, you know, you looked at the guy, maybe the guy that you're wrestling and like, we're going to be able to go out and show these guys a little something tonight.
Well, the thing about IWA Mid-South was I knew that was where my mark was going to be made. So, Ian wouldn't let a lot of people go with and say, hey, just make it look good. But for me, it was always Pondo, just make it look good. And he would always let me do my own thing. So I knew that I must be doing something right to impress that guy because, you know, I mean, he was hard to impress back in the day. But as far as deathmatch stuff goes, I tell everybody this. I can't compete with the guys today. And back when I was one of the only ones doing it, you know, out of maybe a handful of guys in America, I didn't get the notoriety of doing the things that I was doing except there in the Kmart building because, you know, it was just videotape sales and Ian's videotape commentary was enough to make me not want to watch them ever. So a lot of people, you know, tape traders, they got to see it and people out of the country got to see it. But, I did my best to make every match that I did remembered for the next time. Take the Tournament of Death that I did where I landed on the pencils. How many other things do you remember in that Tournament of Death except that I landed on pencils?
I remember you landing on pencils, and I remember seeing a shoot interview later on and you talking about having to drive to a Yankees game with lead in your ass.
Yep. Oh. Yep. It was excruciating. But also, Necro won that one, and Nick Gage caught on fire. That's the only three things people really remember about that whole Tournament of Death. So that's what I was always out to do, leave my mark and go on to the next one and try and leave my mark everywhere that I went. So for you to say that, you know, that my match was the first good one on that show, I could have been the first match. It wouldn't have mattered to me. I could have been the last match. Far as I was concerned, I was there to make my mark, entertain the fans as best I could, where they would go and tell the rest of the fans, hey, you got to check out this Madman Pondo guy, and the rest is history.
Sure, awesome. Mike?
Now, in your next match, you worked with Doug Gilbert. I've heard a lot of good and bad about Doug. I've heard sometimes he could be hard to work with. He definitely, he always carried that Memphis style with him, you know, getting heat and whatnot, and something that sometimes slowed down the matches. A lot of stalling, a lot of crowd work, but that was a style. Memories of your match with Doug, did you ever have any problems working with Doug?
No, we always, I mean, we got along from the get-go. We always had good times with each other, but the next time you watch that, if you think that I knew that I was going to be the only one going off the edge of that ring from that suplex, he called the spot. He said, suplex into that pit of barbed wire. And I said, yeah. And I'm thinking in my mind, holy shit, I can't believe Doug Gilbert's getting ready to take this bump. But then you saw he stayed on the ring, and I was the only one that went down into the pit. But just like I was telling you guys, even though I was the only one that went down in the pit, and I did cut my chin on that, it still made all the crowd, you know, pop. So Doug actually did me a favor by doing that.
Pondo, I got to tell you something. So my grandpa is 90, took me to my first WWF matches when I was about 5. Grandpa was actually into tape trading when the tape trading started. I grew up in northern Indiana, so 5 hours from where you guys did that match. My grandpa still talks about you going into that barbed wire pit as the craziest thing he's ever seen. I've shown him some of the stuff these new kids are doing, but he's like, no, Pondo, you know, that was the best. You know, he still thinks Jerry Lawler's the toughest guy in the U.S. So, you know, you're not going to break him of that.
He might be.
Yeah.
I mean, not too many 65-year-olds are still taking that front flip. That back flip over the top rope, you know.
Well, I don't know too many guys that die on national TV and go back and work wrestling matches less than a year later either.
There you go.
But yeah, so I was going to ask you with Doug Gilbert, again, lots of stalling, lots of work in the crowd. Does that throw off timing and stuff? Are you like, come on, dude, I'm down here selling for 5 minutes? You know, you're kind of. Yeah, you're building heat, or is that good because you can get a little bit of a breather?
I really never even needed a breather back then. Like, I was ready to take the next bump or do the next psycho thing. If you go through that whole tournament, you will see that some of the stars of that did not take too many bumps, but
correct.
That's what made me stand out was I was willing to take any bump there was. Even after the fact that it all got done and everything, Ian even had said, I should have went to the main event with you. That way, you know, there would have been some impressive bumps. I can't even remember who Ian did go to the main event with.
He went with Axel because Doug... For some reason, Doug didn't continue, even though he won. He was supposed to be in the finals. I don't know. Do you remember any of that reason why he didn't? Or
I don't think he wanted to do the first one, more or less another one.
Certainly. And he'd already done two. So
yeah.
And
he did actually reach out to me on Facebook. I reached out to him, and he said, I don't want to even think about those days. So I would imagine it was probably what Pondo said, is he was just ready to move on from that.
Right.
It also looked like he had a fairly bad cut in his forehead. He was wrapped up pretty good when he came out and hit those power drivers and kind of sneaked to the back there. You know, and I just rewatched the show and did notes on it, and I don't think Ian took two bumps the whole night.
Right.
You know, and worked three matches. So, you know, I don't. Again, when you're the booker, I guess you can do that. I wanted to ask, booking in the back, how much was there? Did Ian lay out matches, or did he just kind of come to you and say, Pondo, you're going over, Pondo, you're doing the job?
I really didn't even know half the time what I was doing until I showed up at the building. So, yeah, I would say it was hands-on. Show up and find out.
Very cool. And then you guys just called everything in the ring, or?
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about things in the back and hope that goes for the best. But say you're doing, you know, which I've done so many for that company, fans bring the weapons. You don't even know what they have out there. So it's more or less play by ear, you know, play by what you find out there. But every once in a while, there would be like those light tube log cabin things.
Mm-hmm.
I told Ian, I can be the first one to tell you that I was the first one to go through one of those log cabin, light tube log cabins, because I had the idea, because there was just a shitload of light tubes out back behind the Kmart building, and not even Ian, but some of the security guards that would show up early when I was there would say, man, we got to do something. These light tubes are getting rained on. They're getting dirty. And then I came up with, well, why don't we make a log cabin out of them? And we did that. I took the power bomb through the first one. I did the first one in Japan, which those are pretty frequent now. You know, nobody realizes I was the first one to do a lot of this shit because it was all on videotapes and those are so extinct now that nobody even realizes that there was death matches back then. But
well, that's what this show's for. We want to get the credit to the right guys. I'm hoping that, you know, a million people listen to this. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen, but you know, I want the right people to hear this. And I mean, like I said in the intro, you guys are the bravest warriors that step into that ring. I tip my hat 100%. I went to wrestling school for 3 months and I was told I was too big to be a manager. And unless I wanted to learn how to bump like a worker, it's not for me. So I walked out of there. I give so much credit to what you guys do. And that's why Mike and I are doing this project, is where it was at in 1995 in Japan to where it's at in 2019 in the U.S. is insane. And we want to give credit to the guys that brought the sport to where it's at. You're kind of the innovator of the hybrid style. You actually did some wrestling moves inside of a death match. So I'm glad we can get that stuff out there for you.
Well, I didn't start out doing death matches. I started out doing the wrestling, and then it turned into death matches later. And people say things all the time like death match workers can't work. Well, nowadays, there are some who just slide through and go straight to death matches, but a lot of them are wrestlers that figure out after you get done doing a death match, you're not breathing hard. It was so much easier. And, you know, I'm just happier that way instead of trying to wrestle. Like I can't watch a whole card of wrestling and enjoy myself. There has to be some kind of high fly move or some kind of death match move or a comedy spot or give me something. But, you know, that's not what I started out with. I started out with a bunch of guys who just wanted to wrestle and did not want to evolve to anything else. But hey, we're not doing that. We're wrestling. Like, I was working at a place called Central City, Kentucky. And of course, I was watching all these Japanese and Puerto Rican death matches, and I kept asking everybody, "Hey, let's do a no rope barbed wire." But of course, that's back in the day when we was only getting hot dogs and a Coke if we was lucky sometimes. So guys didn't want to scar their bodies for, right, you know, peanuts. But I'm trying to tell them, well, this is going to help us someday get our name out there. But nobody really could have even imagined what death matches would turn in today. So nobody was really interested in that back in the day. But, you know, I had a vision and I knew that this was what I wanted to do. And I was out to make this just as popular as I could. And here I am talking to you guys today.
Yeah, 29
years. I've been doing this 29 years now.
22 years after that show, and we're talking about it. Right. I do have a question. If you don't want to answer it, it's perfectly fine. Do you remember what the payoffs were that night?
Or the King of the Death matches?
Yeah.
They were not high. I mean, Doug, the other guys got the high paydays. The rest of us guys was doing it just to more or less get our name out there. But I was driving from Flora, Illinois to Louisville, Kentucky doing this shit. And I'm pretty sure they were $15, maybe every once in a while $20. But we didn't care. We knew that this was going to turn into something. You know, you had Kickboxer and Tarek the Great doing high-flying shit to the concrete. You had me and the other deathmatch guys, you know, that show was outdrawing the Louisville Gardens because they had seen the Louisville Gardens style for so many years. And now here's this just freak show of a wrestling show going on. It just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then Ian, every Tuesday, was doing 400 people a show, but you know, it was unheard of to ask for a raise or you know, it was very cheap. But I would have never have gotten my name out there without IWA Mid-South, so I really didn't complain too much.
That's just crazy to think about, because I know in like 2007, 2008, there's a million guys that wanted to be deathmatch workers, and I'm sure the guys that were trying to break in then couldn't ask for more than $25 and a hot dog. Right. But I would think in 1997, I kind of remember being, so I was 12, 13. I remember looking at that and thinking, these guys are fucking nuts. You know, who the hell would want to do this? Which is obviously, you know, I've talked to enough of you guys to know that the spots don't hurt as bad as they look, but they still hurt. I can't imagine there was a million guys standing there to say, oh, Pano doesn't want to work the no-rope barbed wire match? I'll do it.
No, there was none back then. Yeah, I'm the only one wanting to dive into this shit like it's a swimming pool.
Very cool.
Of course, Ian will tell you that he was, you know, the innovator of violence, jumping into all this shit. But if you watch it, any of the past shit from videotapes or any of that, yes, he did bleed a lot. His forehead was always cut, but it was normally me taking all the huge ass bumps into shit and then him getting the pop for throwing me into the shit. But, you know, it just worked out that people appreciated enough that I was taking all these bumps to entertain them that it bled over into getting Pondo chance and getting my name out there.
Well, it seemed like at times, because I'm a few shows in now, that you're moreover than anybody else in the card by far and away. Did that get you heat in the back?
No, not really. IWA Mid-South was, you know, it may have been the Adams family, but we were a family. Like we just wanted that show to go off without a hitch. We wanted the people to go home happy, and we wanted them to go out there and tell other people, hey, you should see this shit that I saw. Like that TV spot, Tom Burton threw me in the large screen TV, and it had been unplugged. Like, I seen it unplugged for hours. But when he threw me down into it, there was still some kind of electric charge in the damn thing, and it's shocking my arms if I lay them down or put my legs in a certain way, and I know the next spot is a bowling ball getting thrown in there. So you had to adapt to, of course, yes, they're death matches, and yes, you can always get hurt, but there was just ways to adapt to, all right, I'm just going to do this shit, get it done, and people are going to talk about it tomorrow. And every time, yes, they did chant my name, or or, you know, get me pumped up for the next time. And that's just what we did. And then shortly after that, like I said, Louisville Garden shut down, and then Jerry the King Lawler went to the commission, actually had a meeting with the commission. A guy named Jack Kearns was the Kentucky commissioner then, and more or less just got the blood shut down in Kentucky, and that just killed IWA Mid-South. But then we went over the bridge to Indiana, and we just kept killing it. We just kept finding places to go and things to do.
Mike, you got anything?
Yeah. Obviously, I would say the only three people on this show that took bumps were you, Cash Flow, and Rolling Hard. And they were both the Ian's opponents. Was there any separation in the locker room? Just, I mean, obviously, you said it was a big family, but you had the guys like you, Mitch Page later, Corporal Robinson later, Too Tough Tony. Then you had Buddy Landell and Mick Martin and Tom Burton and Tony Anthony. And you had the USWA guys, you know, guys who'd been on TV and were WWE. Was there any kind of separation amongst the locker room?
Separation as in, did they stick to themselves in the death
match? Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they see you guys kill themselves, and they probably thinking they're big stars, you know, USWA TV and WWE. And
not at all. It was more like we were all on the same level at that show. I mean, everybody had their place. The USWA guys was a part of the show. The Deathmatch guys was a part of the show. The High Flyers was a part of the show. The USWA guys would tell the Deathmatch guys, oh my God, that's the craziest shit I ever saw. The Deathmatch guys would tell the High Flyers, holy shit, I've never seen anything like that. And of course, the Deathmatch and the High Flyers, we were big fans of the USWA guys. So it was just like I'm telling you, it was just one big, happy IWA Mid-South family.
Awesome. Awesome. Because obviously they're doing different generations and different gaps. So that's good, though, that everyone got along so well. Obviously, that was 23 years ago, 24 years ago, 22 years ago, 97. We're in 99 now. Where did you think death matches would be 20 years from now when you're doing this? Do you think you're in a death matches now are better, or do you think it's worse than where you thought it would be?
I knew that the evolution of death matches was just going to keep getting more violent and more violent. I mean, I was always very smart about things. Like back in the day, I went and did a show, and there was all these veterans on the show, but I, you know, and they're all telling me, hey, listen to me. I've been doing this for 20 years. Hey, listen to me. I've been doing this for 15 years. But I didn't know a fucking one of them guys. And I told myself then that I am not going to be one of these guys that are telling everybody I'm a veteran. I'm at least going to go out there, make my name out. And then even, you know, people consider me a veteran today, but I don't. Like, I just consider myself one of them guys. But I was very smart about not being a 40-miler. So, what was the question? I'm sorry.
What do you think, like, the current state of death matches?
Oh, current state. I mean, look at, there's death match, Game Changer. Just, they're going to Japan now.
Yep.
CZW may not be what it used to be, but Cage of Death is one of the biggest shows for independents everywhere.
Hey, they don't need it this year.
Right. Yeah. And now the Blood Brothers and Sage Sin are starting their thing in California. You know, there's Matt Tremont started H2O in New Jersey. So
You had something pretty big going in Chicago this summer too with the ladies. Don't sell yourself short.
I did. I was so proud of all of them, all eight of them. We did the Death Becomes Her all girls ladies
great show
tournament, and now we're gonna do it again July the 13th this year. So I guess enough people liked it last year that the Baron Brothers decided to do it again this year. And, you know, there was two all-ladies deathmatch tournaments last year. And we were, you know, I was a part of the second one. So I haven't.
Do you guys
heard
have a venue
one.
Announced for that, Bondo?
Yeah, it's the same venue, the Summit.
The Summit building.
Yeah.
Do you think Resistance will ever run a male deathmatch tournament?
Here's the thing about that. We tried, but a lot of them was afraid of pissing off Game Changer Wrestling that they okay. did not want to do it. And I totally understand that. I mean, politics of wrestling today, you know, is just more crazy than it ever was back then. Back in the day, it was such a tight-knit system of wrestlers. Now it's everybody knows everything about everything, and so I understand, you know, you don't want to step on anybody's toes. And say that last year we did do an all guys, and then Game Changer got pissed off about it, and then you know, some of the guys who are going to Japan now wasn't going to go because of what they did. So I totally okay. understand that. But one place that I left out was that VOW with the Lords of Anarchy. They yep. they still do a lot of deathmatch stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's a lot of deathmatch tournaments. I mean, you know, H2O has one, OPW had one, GCW has two, CZW, or JC Rotten's new Southern Train Deathmatch Rec. Cup, which we're going to have this summer. Colorado, you've got Primos. California has a Guys Girls, and they have the UEW. So there's definitely a lot of death matches going on, you know, around the country. Last year was you know, this year they've had two in Europe, and they've got another one coming. So it's definitely becoming you know, a big thing, and a Game Changer, without a doubt. You know, Game Changers brought in a lot of legends. I wonder when they're going to bring in Madman Pondo.
Brett had talked to me about it, but I really didn't want to drive to Philly. I'm in my old age. I've gotten to the point, I hate driving to Philly. I don't know if you guys, are you guys from Philly, or have you
been? I live in Chicago suburbs, and I drove to Chicago, or to New Berwyn, New Jersey, like 2 years ago. Yeah. That's a drive that makes you want to kill yourself after about halfway through Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Penny Rile is a suicide road. You just want to kill yourself. But anyway, I didn't know that Game Changer was going to start going to Japan and Atlanta and all those places. Otherwise, I would have been a bigger part of it. But back in the day when Brent wanted me to drive, you know, to the East Coast, I just wasn't interested in it back then.
Right.
You know, they run that Summit building every now and then, Pondo. I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe we could see you there. They're going to be there in May. That'd be pretty cool to see you go in there. They got Nate Webb to do a match, a death match against Marcus Crane.
Man, I don't know if I could hang with them guys no more. I'm 49 now, and, you know, they are, as much as I thought I was hardcore back then, man, they do some shit nowadays that just...
You hung with the Rejects pretty good in that match with Oren. In Chicago a few weeks ago, we were all kind of talking in the bleachers that, you know, the boys are going to come in and bump around for you and make you look real good and give you that shine. And holy cow, they didn't have to work hard for you. You could definitely tell that they were all excited to be in there with you, but you put on the show. You were the reason a lot of people were there. No one went home unhappy.
I don't want to be the guy who gets in a match like that and doesn't take a bump at all. You know, I want to give as much courtesy to the other guys in the matches they're giving to me. So yeah, I work at that pretty much as hard as I can.
Awesome. Yeah. I've seen some of your later matches and you still work hard. You know, you can see your heart is in it. And obviously you've been a wrestling fan since before you were a wrestler. And, you know, definitely it shows. I know in other interviews, me and you have talked about old territories and everything and whatnot. And definitely we had an in-depth interview about Japan. So, you know, it definitely shows that, you know, how your heart is in it. And you definitely were one of the innovators of the American deathmatch scene, especially yeah. bump-wise, you know, and taking these crazy bumps. You know, I still remember, you know, the one where you engaged, went off that, like, scaffolding in the one King of Deathmatch tournament.
We were both supposed to hit that table. Somehow Gage worked it out where he hit the table and I hit the floor on the other side. Thanks, Nick.
You know, are you and JC Bailey with the circus death match and whatnot? And definitely, obviously, you know, Matsunaga passing.
I want to say something about that because the guys that are at Trash Bag and fans that lead along with them. They just hate on that match so much. And don't get me wrong, they can hate on me all they want. I can care less what they say, but why would they want to hate on a guy who put his heart into this shit and is not here anymore? I don't understand that shit whatsoever. So I really don't defend myself that much, but I defend JC as much as I can.
Well, who is that? Is that what you said?
The Trash Bag Wrestling Company.
No, it's guys. A Facebook group, Mike.
I'm not familiar with them, but you know, I was at the last TOD JC was at and I hung out with him, and it was really cool to have that time to hang out with him. And obviously, he was a friend of yours. So you know, this is just directed from me and not from Pondo, but for the Trash Bag people, you know, fuck you. You know, we're talking about Pondo. He's a legend. JC Bailey was a legend. He was one of the guys that really kind of brought the hybrid style in place too. And you could tell he loved what he did. People have our demons in life, but, you know, he was an amazing wrestler. You know, he always put his heart in these matches. You didn't get bad JC Bailey matches, and you and him, the spectacle of you guys coming off of that. So, you know, they should try it sometime.
That's it. Let's see them do it, huh?
Yeah, so fuck them. That's just for me.
No, I'll second that. JC Bailey was an awesome worker, and I consider myself lucky to have gotten to watch him work. I got to see him live once. As a fan, the guy would stop right there and talk to you and take a picture with you. And not everybody in this business does that. So JC Bailey always treated me fair. Trash Baggers, you guys can get fucked as far as I'm concerned. I've seen you guys tear a lot of these Indiana indie guys down too. Fuck you. These guys are living their dreams. If your dream is to make fun of people on Facebook, like I always tell people, I'm 6 foot tall and 200 pounds. Come and talk shit to my face. I don't think you're going to.
Yeah, and that's right. What I never understood. You cannot like something without tearing people down. There's a lot of parts of wrestling I don't like, but I still respect the wrestlers that do it. I'm not a huge comedy fan. I'll be the first to say it. I really don't like the comedy matches, but I respect that you're doing it, and I would never trash on them at a personal level as some of these other assholes do. I might just say that's not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, because it's not. But, yeah, people are assholes. You know, especially you know, JC, you know, rest in peace. Like I said, I've seen him in a few CW shows, and at the last TOD, I got to hang out with him and Drake and have a couple beers outside the show, and he's a really cool guy. And it was nice to, you know, see those three matches he put on, and always great matches with him. And then you know, you guys always tore it up, and, you know, even in the East Coast and whatnot. And it's a shame that he left us so early because he was such a shining star.
Man, it's almost been 10 years, 9 years now, almost. That's crazy.
He would still be going strong if he was here today.
He'd be putting on good matches, too, for sure. Yeah,
one of the biggest names out there he'd be, because he was so good then, you know. And we lost a lot of people, unfortunately, like guys like Brain Damage, too,
mm-hmm,
who was another great talent.
Yeah, so, we just lost Nate Hatred, you know.
Absolutely.
A little different. But, you know, he's another one that, man, they said he was gearing up to go back in the ring, too. That would have been great to see him in. For my money, one of the best sellers in for a monster, a guy that's, you know, traps are as big as my chest. The guy could always make you feel sympathy, and that's pretty cool. Pondo, a serious question, finally. You know, let's break this up a little bit. You got a pretty sweet ponytail there in 97. Is that ponytail holding back Kentucky Waterfall?
You know, I didn't know that that was something to make fun of until Joe Dirt came out.
But brother, I had a killer mullet in 95 too. I'm just asking, just to see it. I'm used to you with the short hair, you know.
The reason that I shaved it, I had a Japanese fiance, and I had to meet her parents in Japan, and, you know, wear the traditional shit and ask the parents if I can marry their daughter, and the forehead already looked like a serial killer, so I just went ahead and cut the hair where it didn't look, you know, so dangerous.
It was just, it shocked me. I'd not seen the show before I watched it. I'd seen highlights, but I'd not seen the show before I sat down to do the notes on it. And I'm like, holy cow, Panda looks young. And whoa, nice ponytail.
There's a lot of young. Go ahead.
Do you remember that ring that you guys were in at all? Because as I was watching the notes, it kept coming back to me that those ropes were massive. Do you remember that? Do you know why they would have been so big? Was that something for...
I really don't remember. I can't remember.
It seems like the ropes are 3 inches thick.
They could be. I really don't know. I just did what I could with them.
Right, for sure.
Absolutely. What would you tell someone today, obviously, about that tournament? You know, if you got some of these new bred, you know, deathmatch fans that haven't went back into history, you know, what would you tell? How would you tell me to watch that show?
I'm sorry. What? I can't understand. What's the question again? What would I tell a deathmatch?
Well, obviously you got your hybrid fans nowadays. How would you kind of sell that show 22 years ago? What would you tell me about it? You know, how would you promo it to me?
Well, are you talking about to get into it or
no, the King of the Death in 97. Yeah, how to get someone to watch it or to follow it. What would you, what would your words about it be?
Of course, back then there wasn't YouTube to show them clips or anything, but I would just start, say there was a group of people sitting at a table, and I would start talking about some of the bumps. The three or four people at the table was like, oh my God, I wouldn't want to see that. I would stop talking to. But the eight or nine that would be like, oh my God, this is really going on. That's the people that I would hype on more and tell them what was going on and come on down to the Kmart building.
Sure, because you didn't see that in 97. You know, that was a newer thing for the United States. I mean, you and Ian had did your trail, but there wasn't tournaments in the United States, you know. There wasn't deathmatch tournaments.
Exactly.
That was the first one, and nothing could ever take that away. 50 years from now, when we're talking about NGI 57 or TOD 200, that's still going to be the first American deathmatch tournament.
That is totally correct. And that was my pitch to this guy, Tim Jackson. I'm like, nobody's doing one. Because, the Mick Foley, Terry Funk, Terry Gordy, Leatherface, Tarzan Yoto, Dan Severn, Gypsy Joe, that was like one of the main traded tapes back in the day. You guys said you was tape traders back in the day.
Absolutely.
Did you have that?
Oh, I still have it on VHS.
I still have it in my mom's house on VHS too.
Yeah. I got the bootleg, and I got the covered version that came out later.
So like I was telling you guys, I always was very smart about figuring things out, and I knew that tournament was that big in Japan that it would be that huge here in America. So that's why I was trying to talk that guy into doing it at the Coliseum in Evansville. And, of course, he dropped the ball, and then Ian picked it up, and it just went from there.
How close were you and him to running it?
We had everything that was supposed to. I mean, we had the materials bought.
Okay.
We had a couple of things built. We had a car that was going, because back then the Coliseum had a big parking lot in the back of it, adjacent to another building. And we had a car that we was going to park out there and have the wrestlers wrestle to and have the crowd come out. We had the lighting out there on the car. We had everything all set up, but then two or three shows before that, Tim Jackson wasn't paying the bills to the building, and he lost the building. And the minute he lost the building,
what promotion was that?
Man, I can't remember. His name's Tim Jackson.
Getting ready to Google it right now.
I don't think you'll find it because it was at the Evansville Coliseum. The Rough Riders was there. I don't remember. On another podcast some other day, I'll ask Tim Jackson what it was called, but I had a t-shirt. I think it was SWF. I really can't remember. I get hit in the head way too much.
I can tell you Tim has passed away, and he last worked as a janitor, but I can't find what his wrestling company was called.
Tim Jackson passed away?
That's what it says.
From
Evansville, Indiana?
Yep.
Yeah, there's an obituary for him. Let's see if we can... Sorry to break the news.
Wow. I had no clue how
long ago. Oh, no, this is a kid. This is a kid. Never mind.
Yeah,
I remember hearing about this kid because he's was killed in Iraq.
I think Tim Jackson's too honored to die.
You know, I have one last thing for you. I know we're rolling quickly up on that hour, and I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you're a busy man. You look back. There's got to be one bump that sits in your brain. And then there's got the other thing I want to ask you, too, is this is we're most likely not going to see a King of the Death match this year. Ian can't do blood anymore, and he doesn't have a building. If you look back, it's 22 years. I mean, Ian's one of those guys that always can kind of find something. You look back, there's one bump from King of the Death matches that's got to stick in your brain. And then when you look at the whole landscape of King of the Death matches, what sticks out to you?
All right. I'll go ahead and tell you this, that just like you said, John Calvin is doing the whatever that – What deathmatch tournament did you say he was doing this year?
The train wreck, the Southern
Sickness Cup.
Okay, and what building is that in?
Yeah, I said somewhere in Memphis. I don't know if he announced a building yet.
Okay, well, I can almost guarantee you that after John Calvin does a deathmatch tournament there, him and Ian will get along. Ian will use that building and then cut John Calvin out of it, and then it'll be Ian's buildings where he can do death matches. So there quite possibly could be a King of the Death matches this year. And Michael Tawney, Fat Ton, the owner of IWA East Coast, I believe there is going to be a Masters of Pain this year. But man, I keep getting off track. And then what was the question again? I'm so sorry.
What's the bump that sticks out to you that you took most? And then the biggest bump that you remember from all of them, you know, as you kind of look back? Because King of the Deathmatch has to feel like your baby. If it wasn't for you, I don't see the show happening again in 2000. You sold the show.
Well, for King of the Deathmatches, you're talking about only a bump for the King of the Death matches, the one that I can remember the most, and you can go back and watch it. Ian got one long table and one short table, and Nate Webb climbed up the edge of the building and jumped off and put me through the two tables with light tubes on it. Do you remember that bump?
I do, yes. I actually just watched it about two nights ago.
All right, if you go back and you watch that again, the leg of the chair, the leg of the table, you know, the bar underneath it that holds the legs on the table is right below my neck. So nobody realized how bad that I had fucked myself up on that. But when Nate took that leap and put me through that table, that bar with the legs of the table came straight up and just jarred my neck so fast that, you know, I had the purple spots and I actually passed out for about 10 seconds. This is an exclusive for you guys. Nobody even knows that. Nate doesn't know it. Nobody knows it. But if you go back and you see that part of that table jerk my neck like that, and when I landed, you'll see that I'm just laying there. When I woke up, I had to remember where I was and what I was doing. And yes, I did walk out of there and I drove myself home and I was just fine afterwards, but I remember even watching the tape to see how long I was laying there out. But
you laid there for a little bit.
Well, I did, but I was awake for some of it.
Mm-hmm. Probably trying to figure out where the fuck you were.
Yes, that's exactly what I was doing.
It did look like you were like blinking your eyes and doing that stuff that we all do when we've taken that shot to the head. We're like, okay, I know where I'm at. Get this black noise out of my eyes. Get the sound out of my ears and kind of come back to life.
So if you go back and you look at that bump, you'll know the secret that, you know, that
and then
came straight up through the back of my neck like that.
Is there one that anybody could have taken, whether it's Murdoch or RSP or any of those guys that have taken in that show that you're like, man, these kids are just taking this thing to the next level of the KOD?
Yes. Necro Butcher's probably the toughest professional wrestler that I ever met in my life. And he went to do a flip over the top rope onto Toby Klein in Olytic, Indiana, for one of the King of the Death matches. Mm-hmm. And when he hit Toby's back, all his front teeth bounced off the floor and he broke all of them. And on that, I didn't watch the bump as it happened, but I remember Necro coming back and sitting in a chair and just, I could tell something was wrong. And I said, Necro, what's wrong with you? And he's like, well, I'm going to be eating bananas for a long time. And I said, why is that? And he picked up his upper lip and all his front teeth were half.
Holy
so
cow.
I totally
Mike,
remember
do
that.
Do you remember what year that was?
2004.
Yeah, it was in Olytic, Indiana. But if you go back and you watch that bump, realize that Necro bounced his teeth off the floor that night.
Jeez. Mike, you have anything else?
Just a real quick thing. Now, you said there's going to be a Masters of Pain this year, huh?
Well, that is the plan as of now. But that's all I can say because we don't even have a location or anything.
Gotcha.
But Michael Fatton, the owner of IWA East Coast now, was asking me about it. And it does sound like that he is serious enough to do it again this year.
Awesome.
That'd be awesome.
So you'll be involved in it too, hopefully.
Yeah,
definitely.
And of course, July 13th, there will be another Death Becomes Her tournament in Summit, Illinois, all women's deathmatch tournament.
If you guys aren't familiar where Summit, Illinois is, it's literally right off 57. If you know Chicago, Milwaukee, Northwest Indiana, Indianapolis, you're not far from there. It's much easier to get to than anything would be in the city or on the north side. It's on the kind of the south but west side of Chicago. Super easy. Indianapolis, you're probably 2.5 hours. Champaign area, you're probably 3 hours. Fort Wayne, Toledo, you're 4 hours. Guys, this is an easy to drive to tournament. You're going to see 8, right, Pondo?
Yeah, 8.
8 of the best women's deathmatch wrestlers in the U.S., not just the Midwestern girls, in the U.S. They're going to go out there. Pondo's involved, so you know it's going to be insane. I don't know why that house won't be packed. We all know that they're going to be the most downloaded videos in the countries that do not allow adult videos shortly after they go up online. And I want to say thank you to Pondo for, as a Midwestern guy, as a Hoosier, we're going to claim you now. You've lived in Indiana long enough that we consider you one of those Hoosier greats that steps in the squared circle. You've done a lot to your body. You've sacrificed a lot. I'm sure I bet you can't even count the miles and the matches you've done to entertain us. This podcast is 100% dedicated to you guys. I want to get an oral history of everything you guys have done. I want to carry this on for generations because my kids are going to look back and be like, these guys are some sick motherfuckers. What's the story? This is the best way we're going to get it out there. Thank you so much for everything you did.
I hope they say that at 10 or 12.
Yeah.
They're some sick motherfuckers. One last thing I wanted to say before
guys
wrap this up. John Cosper had enough confidence in me that people would want to know things that I had to say. So we sat down and we told a bunch of Pondo stories, and there's now a book called Memoirs of a Madman. You can get it at Amazon.com. It's stories of all the crazy shit I've done, plus out in and out of the ring. There's a comic book I was in. There's a scammer conversation on Facebook. And you can get that at Amazon.com, or you can go to EatSleepWrestle.com and talk to John Cosper himself and get an autographed copy.
Great book.
EatSleepWrestle.com, guys. EatSleepWrestle.com or Amazon.
Absolutely. I read it as soon as it came out.
What was your favorite story?
My favorite story. Oh God, we talked about this last time, and now I gotta go. I'm just trying to remember what the son of a bitch.
Not enough people.
Drawing a blank now.
I wait on people to say it was the Junkyard Dog story because.
No. There was a. Who the hell was it with you? And I'm just trying to think. No, I'm sorry. I'm drawing a little bit of blank in my mind. But there was one story with the one wrestler that I thought was fucking was wild. I'm just trying to think in my mind. No, the Junkyard was good. And then obviously, you know, talked about your time with Terry Funk and Kevin Sullivan. But there was one more. It was a wrestler I didn't think. The Eli Roth, too, was a real good part of it, too.
Yeah.
I know me and you talked about it, too. That might have been what I'm thinking of, too, because I'm a big Eli Roth fan. But me and you talked about it in the last podcast, and I really enjoyed, you know, how you talked about, you know, you had the bootleg movie of Cabin Fever. Yeah. And I think that was the story that I was thinking of that I really enjoyed because I'm a big fan of Eli Roth and some of his work. And then I enjoyed the, you know, rubbing shoulders with MC Hammer.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's what you call that. Well, I am going to ask you a question then, because people keep telling me this. While you're reading that book, are you using my voice in your head?
Absolutely.
Isn't that crazy?
Absolutely.
People tell me that all the time. They're like, when I'm reading it, I'm doing it with your voice.
That's we got to get you to do like a book on tape next time. You'll sell more.
Oh, that would be, if you were to do an iTunes recording, that would be amazing.
I'd just love to hear you do like a Christmas Tales or something crazy. Madman Pondo does.
I was thinking about Red Nose Reindeer. An audio book, but I want Freight Train to do the reading.
Well, have him do a foreword for you, and then you do the actual reading. That'd be pretty good. You actually told my little boy when you were cleaning up after the Match Revolution a couple weeks ago. You told my little boy he's going to be in your next book because he's in there taking a dump while you're trying to clean up.
So funny. I remember that. He was like, can I say what he was saying?
Yeah, go ahead. It's fine.
He was like, Dad, I'm trying real hard, but all I got was one nugget out. And I was I start laughing. And you're telling him, shut up, there's other people in here. I'm like, nah, let him go, man. He's good.
He's 5 and he had a stomachache. I think we spent half that show in the bathroom. And then I tried to purposely kind of hide him during you guys and the rejects going at it. Because I'm like, you know, I don't need a 5-year-old seeing light tubes swinging. He's got a 3-year-old little sister that's going to take a chair shot tomorrow. And I don't want to deal with that with my wife. I had him kind of over in the back by the entrance. And then we're in there. He's trying to go to the bathroom. And he had met Reed and John before. And he wanted to say hi to him afterwards. He didn't realize they were going to be covered in blood. And he said hi to John and gave John a high five. And gave Shane Mercer a high five. And we were on our way out. He's like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom again. And I'm like, you know, I see Pondo standing at the sink. And I'm like, just be cool. He just worked a match. You know, thank him. And let's get the hell out of here. And Mike's in there. And he's like, my tummy hurts so bad. Every time I fart, nuggets keep coming out. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Where can we see you? What do you have coming up?
I work a lot at Crossville, Illinois for Strictly Insane Pro Wrestling. March 16th. I'm back at IWA East Coast in Charleston, West Virginia. Or Nitro, West Virginia, sorry. Trying to think, man. I work with a lot of For Horror Slam, which is a pretty cool concept. They use like Leatherface and Freddy and stuff like that at Horror Slam in Michigan for Briar Wellington. Of course, the Gathering's coming up.
Where's the Gathering at this year?
It's somewhere in Indiana.
Right, Indianapolis area, right?
I think it's more closer Indiana-Chicago way.
Then we'll have to be out there for sure.
And then, of course, March the 5th, is Gender Wars, which is My Company Girl Fight versus Paradigm here in the arena. If you see a girl fight show, the girls always work really hard. We just did a good one in Indianapolis, and we have one in Florida at the end of the month. I'm not a character on the show. I don't want to be a character on the show because I want all the attention focusing on the girls, but I'm always at the girl fight shows. So if you see one, come on out and tell me hello.
The gatherings in Springville, Illinois, Indiana this year, which is about, looks like it's about 30 minutes south of Bloomington. So we'll call it the Bloomington metropolitan area.
There you go.
Awesome. So definitely, we'll check you out there, and I'll have to keep my ears open. I'm working at the IWA card now for the East Coast. It was like a great show. Jugulator's on there, and Aaron Williams, and Chance Prophet, a lot of the IWA East Coast guys, Jason Kincaid and yourself, and Toby Farley. So I'm definitely going to keep an eye out, because if they're going to do a deathmatch tournament, definitely be something to check out.
There's some deathmatch workers on there for sure.
Well, yeah, it'd be something to see. You know, some of those ones that you ran were so amazing. I still love the one with Thumbtack Jack and Ito in the finals. One of my favorite deathmatch tournaments of all time.
I would say that deathmatch tournament stands up to any damn one of them. That one had a lot of great shit in it all the way through. Guys want to throw 15, 24 guys in their deathmatch tournaments, but we had 8 guys, and it was as action-packed as anything, you know? I don't understand I get it. They want to do it 2 days in a row. That way they sell 2 days worth of tickets. But to me, I think 8 guys in a deathmatch tournament, that way you're not there until 4 in the morning, is a pretty good formula.
100%. I couldn't agree more. Or the multiple guy matches. I don't like that. That tournament was just amazing. From you and Jack in the first round. Necro and Jugulator had a really violent match. Drake and Ito, and Ito and Havoc, and Jack and Butcher, and then Ito and Jack in the final. Just every match was amazing on that show. It really was a great show.
Well, you also mentioned about 7 Hall of Famers out of those 8, too, you know? There's some boys there.
And I really enjoyed all the Masters of Pain, you know, bringing in June Kasai, the one really cool one with the Corporal Robinson and JC in the Ghetto Shoes match. You always had cool stipulations, and, you know, Elk Louie Adam used to make some crazy shit. And you always
The one with Ito in it was the first barbed wire trampoline.
Yep.
Idea was that? I've heard several names thrown around. Whose idea was the barbed wire trampoline?
Totally Elkview Adams' idea.
Was it?
Yeah. Who else did you say? Did you hear it was their idea?
I've heard somebody out. I don't want to. I'm not going to blame throw any names out there. I just heard somebody from out east. You know, I don't want to. I don't want to get any heat. I'm not a tough guy.
Elkview Adam was the one that came up with that shit.
Yeah, he came up with some interesting shit for the different East Coast tournaments over the years.
He sure did.
And I enjoyed them all, you know, going right down to the 2012 one, right up to the 2015 one. I mean, Ron Mathis and Gage was a great final. You know, Tremont and Masada was a great, you know, you really always booked the great tournaments, and you brought in unique and cool talent, you know, bringing in the Big Japan guys was awesome.
Right.
So definitely. So thank you very much for coming on. You know, we talked about this. What's that?
Hello? I didn't say nothing.
Are you there? Oh,
yeah.
So thank you for coming on. Like I said, you know, if you do, help book this Masters of Pain tournament, I'll definitely reach out to you again, and maybe me and Steven will get you on the Deathmatch News. We'd love to hype that and help, get people to go out and see that.
And please help me hype the July 13th Death Becomes
We'll get you on there before there. I'd love to get some of your girls on, too, and talk to them.
I definitely will.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
That would also be good. You know, we've got our other show, the Off Topic or whatever we're calling it. I can't remember now. I know I came up with it today, but it's gone now. Get on and talk about some of the good girl workers, and you know, have a girl come on and talk about that. And I want to plug the heck out of that and get that thing huge for you.
Well, sure.
Sounds great,
you
know, man.
We're getting a pretty good showing for our different podcasts. So, yeah, we get you on a couple of shows. We get someone Off Topic. We get you on with me and Steve in the Deathmatch News. I'd love to talk to some of the girls. I know when Sage did a tournament out west, I talked to like 5 of the girls. And we did interviews the week before. So, yeah, I love professional wrestling, all forms of it. I love deathmatch wrestling. I do all this because I love it. So anything we can do to help promote these shows, and you know, we have a big following on the deathmatch cult page. Anything we can do to get more people to you know, our wrestling cult network, anyone who wants to check that, anything we can do to get people on there and come see your shows, we'd love to help you.
Sounds great, man.
If you ever
Mike
wanna...
says he's in it for the he loves it. I'm just in this for the money. There's lots of money in this.
If you ever right. If you ever want to do a special skull talk again,
you're going broke, Max. You're going broke.
If you ever want to do a special skull talk again, I'd be happy to record and put you on our network.
I would love to, but the girls are a lot harder to get nowadays than they was back then.
right. Definitely. Love the skull talk. Good stuff.
Hondo, again, I want to thank you for everything you've done to your body, everything you've done for our entertainment. You did it right the whole time. You never felt like you were ripping the fans off to just go out there and grab a payday like some of these other guys do. Thank you so much for everything you did to your body and for entertaining us for the last 29 years. I you know, gratefully grateful for it.
Thank you for being fans. Without you guys, I wouldn't even be on this podcast today.
Well, thanks again, and have a great night. I'm going to go put some pants on and see if my lady let me back in bed, because I had to get out and go in the other room to do this, so I got the evil look as I went. But that's okay.
I hear you.
It was well worth it. Have a good night, my friend, and I'll definitely reach out to you before the girls show and anything else you got going on. We'll set up some interviews and some things to help hype them.
All right. Sounds great, guys. Thank you for your time.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye.